from the Star Rental Sports Desk. Your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, kiddos, happy Monday. Headlines on Softy and Dick, brought to you by our friends, of course, at VenueKings.com.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
Seahawks, 44-34 loss to Buffalo yesterday. The 44 points allowed, by the way, by the Hawks is the most since Week 16 of the 2019 season, when the Hawks lost and gave up 48 to the Packers under Jim Mora. Hawks will try and rebound against the Rams on Sunday at 1:25 in Los Angeles.
NFL injury news. Jadeveon Clowney did not play yesterday and may need surgery to repair a torn meniscus. Christian McCaffrey, who just returned yesterday to the field, injured again. May miss time with a shoulder injury, and Washington quarterback Kyle Allen lost for the season.
College basketball, the AP Top 25 is out this year. Gonzaga, number one in the country, followed by Baylor, Villanova, Virginia, Iowa, Pac-12, Arizona State, 18, Oregon, 20, UCLA, 22nd.
UW Arizona, November 21st, scheduled for a 5 p.m. Pacific time kickoff.
And the Falcons have waived linebacker Tech McKinley, the 26th pick in the 2017 draft, 17.5 sacks and 49 games for Atlanta.
And here we go.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers.
Just brutal radio. Just horrible.
Live. 41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
Hey, Seattle.
This is Softy and Dick.
All right, lots to get to on a busy Monday morning. A third Monday morning.
Wow.
In 3, 2, and 1. Lots to get to on a busy Monday afternoon right here on 950 KJR. Apparently, I'm not the only one who needs some therapy here on a Monday afternoon. Hawk fans are obviously panicking, and maybe they should panic after what they saw yesterday. I mean, look, it's not very often. Here's the thing. And, Dick, I think you and I are generally, for the most part, gray area, kind of in the same room when it comes to the Seahawks defense. They're not very good, but are they really this bad? Mm-hmm. They'll get players back. They should get better as the year goes by, blah, blah, blah. However, I'll just say this. It's not very often. How many Super Bowl champions, how many conference champions can you go back and look at and say they gave up the most points ever allowed under that head coach the year they went to a Super Bowl at any given time? It doesn't usually work like that, where a coach has a defense that's that bad, where they are historically awful, number one, and then number two, have a game anywhere near the course of a 17-week season where they gave up the most points ever under that head coach in his tenure with that franchise and still found a way to bounce back and get to a Super Bowl. So, I don't know. Look, I mean, we can do two things here, Dick. Either A, we can just focus on what happened yesterday, or B, we can look at what happened yesterday and then try and translate what it looks like the rest of the year. I would just prefer to look at what happened yesterday and look at it in a vacuum, but I know a lot of people don't want to do that. So, here we go.
Well, that's the smart way to do it, yeah. But there's something that the Seahawks in 2020 have to deal with that none of those other teams that you talked about or reference had to deal with, and they never had a training camp. And you don't have, when you don't have a training camp and you have a ton of new players who you really don't know A, what their skill set is, B, where they're best used. I mean, look at all the guys on this defense that weren't a part of this defense last year that Pete Carroll, Ken Norton on the fly are trying to plug in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. And this is going to be something that no other team's ever had to deal with and that will take the Hawks a while. So as they get healthy, which you and I have talked about many times, and they are starting to but are nowhere close, when you have, I mean, when you have an injured Quentin Dunbar playing and no Shaq Griffin at cornerback, what do you expect is going to happen against the passing game?
Yeah, I guess here's my thing on that, and you're exactly right about not having a training camp, guys are banged up. But look, I mean, if the Seahawks don't go as far as we want them to go in 2020, those will be reasons why. I mean, it's just reality, right? So it's not like you can't sit there and give them an excuse or a pass for that, because that's what you're dealing with. And I said this on Twitter, you know, about an hour ago. I mean, look, guys, I don't care how many yards the Hawks give up in the end. I don't care how many games they win in the end. What I care about is how far this team goes in the playoffs. That's what I care about. I don't give a damn if you go 9-7 or 15-1 or 14-2. How far are you going in the postseason? So what I'm asking you this is a question I got for you. 49451, Coors Light text line for text testimonials of 445 as well. Is this fixable? is what's happening right now fixable? And if this team ends up playing a Tampa Bay or a New Orleans or a Green Bay offense in the playoffs, how much confidence do you have that this coaching staff and the pieces that they have on defense right now, and that doesn't even include the pieces that played yesterday, that's everything, the guys on the IR, the guys on the COVID list, or the guys on the practice squad, Damon Harrison, Michael Kendricks, Shaq Griffin, Ugo Amadi, do we believe that this team can figure this out in time to when they do have a game like that, which they most certainly will play, by the way, in the playoffs, against an offense like that, they can put up a performance that at least will give themselves a chance to win that game in the fourth quarter. Do we believe that?
Absolutely, because you're in a conference where there's no dominant team. You're in the conference that is the absolute dictionary definition of flavor of the week best team. Last week's flavor of the week best team was the Tampa Bay Bucks. The week before's flavor of the week's team was the Seattle Seahawks. Now the flavor of the week team is the New Orleans Saints. It's been the Green Bay Packers in the past. It just rotates every single week. And, yeah, you talk about playing Tampa Bay. Boy, their offense looked really good last night. You talk about the New Orleans Saints. Everybody's been complaining that Drew Brees can't complete a pass past 25 yards anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are the teams that you're playing. There are no great teams in the NFC. So, yes, Seattle as a team is every bit as good as every other team in the NFC right now because they all have significant weaknesses.
Yeah. Except for the Hawks have the worst defense by far of those teams that you talked about. Right now they do.
But they have the best offense.
Right, but they also have the worst defense. So if the offense has a stutter like they had yesterday,
yes,
and that's the concern is that, man, there's so much pressure on this defense to be – or this offense to be great. Look, despite the fact that Russell Wilson had two fumbles and two picks in that game yesterday, you still scored 34 points. You've scored 68 points combined in the two games you've lost. No team in the NFL should score 34 points and lose ever, and they've done it twice now. Now, some of that maybe, like we talked about yesterday, garbage yards
garbage
in the fourth
points.
Quarter.
Absolutely.
Hawks are down 34-20 with 9:45 left to go in the game, and they find a way to put up 14 more points. The Bills find a way to put up 10 more. So I just believe this, that I think that nothing has changed since the offseason. You and I sat here on the air. We all sat here on the air, all of us, and said, well, the defensive line's going to suck. They're going to be terrible. Pass rush is going to be awful. And they weren't awful yesterday, but guess what? The secondary was even worse.
Yep.
They were terrible. I mean, all these sacks the Seahawks got, we can sit here and go down the list. KJ Wright for a sack. Bill score a touchdown the same drive. Jaron Reed, who may have had his best game since 2018 yesterday, has a sack. Comes on a field goal drive. KJ Wright, field goal. Bobby Wagner, missed field goal. Carlos Dunlop has a sack, and they score. Two plays later, they give up 39 yards on second and 27.
Yep.
So every single... Dick, you know what this is like, the Seahawks defense? It's like my golf game. Honestly. One day, my driver could be awesome, but I can't chip for crap.
Yeah. No, it's a great
call.
The
next day, my chipping is unbelievable, but I can't putt to save my ass.
And that's what makes us 15 handicaps, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Every single week, there's something different with this freaking team. It's like my golf game, and my golf game kills me.
I think it's a fantastic comparison. I do agree with you that this was an offensive problem as well. Make no mistake, this offense scored 20 points.
Yeah.
I mean, because if I'm going to talk about garbage yards allowed by the Seahawks defense in prior games, I'm going to talk about garbage points and garbage yards by the Seahawks offense in this game, because those were... The Seahawks scored 20 points, and Russell Wilson shouldn't even have been in the game, in my opinion, in the last 4 or 5 minutes of that game. When you're down three scores, Russell Wilson should not
totally
be,
agree.
Especially when he got hit 16 times, which is more than any other quarterback in the NFL this entire season.
Mm-hmm.
He got hit 16 times. This offense needs balance. I understand you didn't have your top two running backs in that game, but now Russell Wilson is 4-12 when he throws 40 times or more. They are averaging in the two losses 45 attempts. In their wins, they're averaging in the low 30s.
Yeah.
This team has to run the ball to win games consistently, and let's hope they can do that beginning next week. Whether or not they get Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde back, they have to establish some semblance of a running game.
Well, I don't think they can do that without Chris Carson or Carlos Hyde or Rashad Penny, and I'm even sure if Penny plays this year. I mean, what's going on with that guy? There's been like crickets, right, from them in regards to this guy. So I totally agree with you, and I think they got to do it to control the clock and give their defense a blow. I mean, that really is the big thing. You know, I mentioned that yesterday, and folks were hitting me back saying, well, the Seahawks offense didn't give up 44 points. Well, you're right, but the Seahawks offense did not do the defense any favors putting them back out there over and over and over again. I don't think they can get to where they want to go running-wise with DJ Dallas and Travis Homer and Alex Collins. I don't think they can. Those guys aren't good enough.
Well, maybe not. I mean,
they're not. That's why they're fourth, fifth, and sixth string guys.
But Travis Homer had a game last year where he started against San Francisco in a division championship game, and he had 10 carries for 62 yards, averaged 6.2 yards per carry. I mean, DJ Dallas, mixed reviews last week, but he did score two touchdowns. I didn't think he played great, but I'm not going to bury the guy after one start and say he can't play.
You said he stunk a week ago.
It was one game. I don't want them to entirely give up on the running game before the game even starts. And being down 14-0 in the first quarter is no excuse for changing your game plan and not running the football.
I think you and I are in some way saying the same thing, because both of us want them to run the ball. I agree with you. They should not totally abandon the run because Carson, Hyde, and Penny aren't playing. What I'm saying, I believe, I don't think they can get to the level that they want to get to rushing offense-wise with these guys out there. That's what I'm saying. Let's come back and take a quick break. We'll chat more about this. Lots of stuff to yak about with the Seahawks game yesterday. Can this thing be fixed on defense? I mean, somebody somewhere that I know made the analogy to Fernando Rodney when he was saving all these games, but he was walking the house and giving up three or four runs a night on his way to a save, and you kind of felt like maybe at some point that was a sinking ship that was going to hit the bottom of the ocean, and look what happened to Fernando Rodney. Is this defense Fernando Rodney? They've been good enough to win 6 of 8 games, which nobody would turn that down. Six of eight every single time. You'll take 6 and 8 and 12 and 4 every single year. But is this Seahawks defense the NFL version of Fernando Rodney, where at some point it's going to go boom and fall apart in the most important time of the year? 3:13, a lot to get to, including Joel Klatt back on the show from Fox at 4 p.m. today.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the 12th man in the NFL, Seattle's original diehard sports station, Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Hey, Joel Klatt is back on the radio show.
Yeah, baby.
At 4 o'clock today, we'll get his thoughts on the Pac-12, the Dogs, Alabama, LSU this weekend, Clemson, Notre Dame last weekend, where had about 70 million people on the field after the Notre Dame win against the Tigers over the weekend, man. You see what they said? The Notre Dame president said that basically all the students, if you're not getting tested for COVID, you can't go to a game. You can't even leave campus unless you're getting tested for COVID. And if you leave and don't get tested, then you're done for the next semester.
How are they proving that they're getting tested?
Well, they've got, I guess they don't let them back in the campus until they get tested, right, for the next semester. Or maybe they have to bring like a little, maybe like they get their hand stamped when they go back to the game.
You go, like, to get back into a club, you got to get your hand stamped.
There's no hand stamp or like one of those glow sticks around their neck or whatever. You don't have that, then you're screwed. So Joel Klatt will join us coming up at 4 o'clock. Hugh Millen at 4:20 on the radio. Show a little bit from Pete Carroll as well at 5 o'clock. Today is obviously the biggest question facing this football team, I think, is the defense. I mean, some folks may say the quarterback. I just think this. The reason why you start with the defense, Dick, for me, because Russell Wilson has equity that this defense does not have.
Correct.
He has earned the benefit of the doubt that when he has a game like he had yesterday and a game like he had against Arizona, or excuse me, a second half like he had against Arizona, that that's not going to be repeated very often. The defensive performance that we're seeing from this team week in and week out, for the most part, except for the Niner game, is being repeated. So I'm way more concerned about the defense. I have much more confidence in Russell Wilson bouncing back than this defense, for sure. Come on.
Oh, yeah, and I think part of Russell Wilson's problems yesterday was the imbalance I talked about. When you have no respect that the team's going to run the ball, you're just going to bring it at the quarterback and give him hell. And and that's something that Russell usually doesn't have to deal with, because usually he has a stable running back to a running game to lean on. But it was like a people in the wrong place problem yesterday for that defense. I mean, I'm going to put that half on the coaches, half on the players. If it's a teaching problem, like Pete Carroll said, he said yesterday, quote, "We gave them some stuff with some misplay. We did not plan to be off of them as much as it looked like. There is stuff we do at practice that we didn't do in the game." Mm-hmm. That tells me that's fixable. It's the onus on the coaches to translate that to the players to get it fixable. I do not believe it's a talent problem, Dave. I look at this team, and if I saw a healthy Dunbar, a healthy Shaq, Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs back there with those two linebackers along with Jordan Brooks to now a defensive line that's been going to be adding Snacks Harrison and a Dunlap who looked really, really good yesterday.
Yeah,
I think you have the talent absolutely on that defense if you can get them in the right place with the right scheme at the right time.
Well, he also said yesterday they were expecting a much heavier dose of the run, and they didn't get that.
So, I was too.
Yeah, but that's concerning though, right? I mean, when a head coach comes out and says, we weren't prepared for this much of a passing attack, and they just kicked their ass with that passing attack. I mean, that's concerning for me, right?
Yes.
I mean, if you're sitting there and you're expecting one approach and you don't get it, and all of a sudden because you don't get that approach, you just wilt and just bend over, that's very alarming for me. And then number two, look, I would just say this on the defensive talent. I mean, you mentioned Jordan Brooks. He hasn't done a lot so far. He's shown flashes, for sure, at times of being a good player, but this is now week eight of the NFL season, and I don't see a guy the Hawks can count on every single week. Jamal Adams, to me, and I think you mentioned this on the postgame show yesterday, I don't know if I've ever seen a guy who was so good in one aspect of his game and so poor in the other. Maybe Jimmy Graham, and you mentioned that yesterday on Twitter.
Yeah.
Jimmy Graham was great.
You read
great.
My tweet?
I did.
You saw my tweet?
And you didn't even have to ask me if I saw it. Jimmy Graham was great in the red zone, right? Great in the jump ball. No question about it. 6'7". Jamal Adams in coverage is a liability. He's terrible in coverage. And we saw that in the Patriot game against Edelman yesterday, dude. You want to know where the game was lost? You know where it was lost. I'll tell you. 2nd and 20, early fourth quarter. You're down 27-20. You've made this comeback, and I'll be honest with you. Down 27-20, Dick, I thought the Hawks were going to win the game. Down 7 points at 27-20.
Yes.
And you got a 2nd and 20, that's 3rd and 9, after a play to Diggs. Ryan Neal blitzes. He gets home. He gets the sack. They're out of field goal range at that point, and they're punting the ball. And Jamal Adams gets a freaking holding penalty downfield because he gets beaten by a wide receiver, and obviously that led to that 3rd and 16 screenplay to Brown, who's wide open. There's nobody within 10 yards of the guy. But, man, Jamal Adams in pass coverage, he killed, I think, any chance they had of coming back and winning that game yesterday with that
flag. I agree with that. That was the play of the game. And if you would have froze time, and when if you'd just asked me, I see Ryan Neal with the sack.
Yeah.
I don't see the flag.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, they're out of field goal range. They're
punting.
You froze time. I would have said, the Seahawks are winning this football game.
Totally.
They're getting the ball back down 7 with all the momentum in the world. It just, that flag just totally took the momentum out, took the balloon
brutal
out for me. It just popped it. But as far as Jamal Adams, I made the comment on Twitter where I said, you know, I compared him with Jimmy Graham. I said, it's possible that Jamal Adams is like Jimmy Graham in the sense that when he is given the assignment that he wants to have, he gives you everything and he's great on it.
Yeah.
When Jimmy Graham was asked to block, not only was he bad at it, he didn't even try. When Jamal Adams is asked to cover, not only is he bad at it, is he really truly giving his best effort to cover, or is he just waiting for the next time he can go to the sideline and yell at Pete Carroll to have him blitz more?
I don't think he's very good at it.
Well, I don't think he's very good at it either, but there's a difference between not knowing how to do something and being taught to do something and just not – I coached many, many high school basketball players that were good at one or two things and only wanted to do one or two things and didn't want to do the other things, and sometimes it's really hard to get them to do those other two things.
I think, and again, this is all just, you know, a guessing game here because who knows – Jimmy Graham, I don't think, gave a damn about blocking. Didn't want to, didn't care, didn't need to. Jamal Adams, I think, would love to be a great cover safety.
I hope so. I think you're right.
Well, why wouldn't he? I mean, it's like ridiculous, right? I mean, look, blocking to me is just about effort and desire. I don't think that Jamal Adams goes out there and says, man, I don't give a damn about covering wide receivers and tight ends. I don't think he's very good at it. Dick, honestly, I think Jamal Adams, this is why I talked about him playing linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
Way undersized at linebacker, clearly by 25, 30 pounds. He's a liability in coverage. I don't think this is a desire problem for Jamal Adams. I think he struggles in pass. That, to me, is a skill set. It's a skill to be able to cover pass catchers in the National Football League, and it's a skill at least at an elite level or even above average level that I don't think Jamal Adams possesses.
Well, I think Pete Carroll and Ken Norton have got to basically run a training camp in the middle of the season. They need to go back to the basics on these guys, specifically with the guys that they haven't had on their team before, who have never had a training camp with them. Dunlap, Dunbar, Adams, Snacks Harrison. I mean, you're going to have, what, five, six starters on that defense that have never had a training camp with Pete Carroll?
Yeah.
And maybe you have to sacrifice the scout a little bit of your next team and instead just focus on the basics of coverage and the basics of pass rush, stuff that you normally do in August, you might have to do in November.
Well, if they're talking about it's November 9th and they're talking about focusing on the basics and the fundamentals of pass rush and coverage, then they're going to be in trouble. I mean, honestly, if that's what they're looking at right now. Yeah, I'm looking at Jamal Adams, and PFF has him ranked. I have no idea if this is all safeties. I think it might be all safeties. Mm-hmm. 46th out of 87 in coverage among safeties in the National Football League.
That's generous.
Right? And again, that may be among all safeties. Anybody who's taken one snap might be on that list. So what I see is a guy who's not very good. I see a guy who's got desire, because you know what? If Jamal Adams didn't have any desire, Dick, I don't think that he's firing off the line of scrimmage and coming from the back end into the backfield the way he is on TFLs. And this guy's a missile, right? Great open field tackler. We've seen that, right? No
he
doubt.
Blew up that tight end like,
can
he was,
get home,
like he was me.
Put a lick on Josh Allen yesterday, who's much bigger than he is. So I think the desire's there. I just think it's a big part of his game that's missing right now. And then Quentin Dunbar, you know, what comes out after the game, he's been banged up with a knee injury, blah, blah, blah. You know, look, I'm not saying that's not right, okay? I'm sure he's banged up. I think it's convenient, though, because he looked awful in that game yesterday. Quentin Dunbar looked like a dude that just got here to Seattle, mm-hmm. and was literally fighting that armed robbery case up until 4 days ago.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about, I'm hesitant. He looked like he was just kind of tepid going after receivers, even guys after the catch. He's waiting for somebody else to make a play. For whatever reason, whether what he went through over the offseason, Dick, or injury or whatever, Quentin Dunbar, to me, has been the biggest disappointment on this football team in 2020. Because we talked about this.
Yeah.
We talked about the guys that we were most fired up for. Quentin Dunbar, outside of Jamal Adams, was the guy that came up the most. Look at his numbers. Look at his opposing quarterback rating last year with Washington. He comes on our show and he says, you know what? Maybe if the Redskins weren't so freaking awful, maybe I would have sucked it up and played last year. He said that on this radio show to you and me. He was a guy that I was jacked up to solidify that cornerback spot next to Shaq Griffin. I think he's been a turd so far.
He has been a turd. At least Trey Flowers actually played pretty well yesterday.
Yes, so that's
he
did.
That's good to see.
He did play good.
And I think Dunbar is going to be fine when he has a few more weeks to A, get healthy, and B, figure out what the hell he's doing. And, you know, I was just really, really upset with how they were defending the receivers, meaning
bailing out.
You and I talked about on Friday, what was Josh Allen's weakness? Going down the field 40 yards down the sidelines. And the one time he threw it down the yard, down the sidelines 40 yards, he overthrew the guy by 3 yards. What Josh Allen was really, really good at is hitting targets that drive 20 yards and come back to the football. And he was doing it all day long. I don't understand why they were not forcing Josh Allen to throw the ball deep downfield and taking away everything in the middle.
Because anytime they've had anyone throwing deep against them on a regular basis, they're getting beat.
Yeah, but Kyler Murray's way more accurate at Josh Allen at that.
Can their I'm sorry to jump in here, but can their defensive backs?
Go ahead.
I know.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Can their
who are you anyway? Where's Jackson for crying out loud?
Have their defensive backs shown any ability to actually stop guys from beating them over the top against anybody?
Yeah. No, they haven't.
So that's why you don't let them throw over the top, because even Josh Allen will probably beat them.
Well, look, Josh Allen was the epitome of mediocrity the last four games, right?
Yes.
Pedestrian quarterback.
Yes. I had no faith in him beating us over the top.
One game with a passer rating over 90. He had four interceptions and four picks in his last four games, and they made this guy look like Dan Marino in that game yesterday, okay?
Yeah.
And that's the disappointing thing for me. So
wide open guys all day long within 10 to 15 yards of him.
Well,
wide open.
Let me tell you what Josh Allen was doing on deep balls. He had a passer rating of 108.9 on deep passes, 20 yards or more downfield. Four touchdowns, two picks. So, you know, right about the middle of the road, honestly. No, I'm saying overall in the NFL.
Yeah.
Middle of the road, that's what he does.
Are those air yards, though, or are those 15-yard catches that run
20 yards or more downfield?
Okay.
So the ball's in the air 20 yards or more, at least 20 plus. And he had a passer rating, or has a passer rating, of 108.9. I mean, like, part of that's because of what happened yesterday, obviously. This is Monday after a Seahawks game. But he's right there in the middle of mediocrity. Not terrible. Not great. I'd be curious to know where he was before the game. I just think this, that I look, the offense helping the defense has got to be a factor. You cannot turn the ball over and put this defense in a position where the opponent has the ball inside your 50-yard line to start a drive, because they're going to score points every single freaking time. The days of an offense getting the ball at the plus 45 and going backwards, or going three and out and picking up 3 or 4 yards, those days are over. So they got to be perfect. They got to get those running backs healthy, and Russell Wilson has to stop making these ridiculous turnovers. 3:35, time for Fact or Fiction, brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino, right now.
It's time for Fact.
Just a fact, Jack. Just a fact, Jack.
Or Fiction, powered by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
All righty. Another disappointing week for Dave Softy Mahler in the Fact or Fiction game. I mean, it could have been worse, I guess. And technically, I'd like to point out, I'm riding a one-game winning streak. Technically. Because I gave you Oregon State against Wazoo, which was a complete turd, on Saturday night.
Yep.
And then we found out before the Oregon-Stanford game that Davis Mills was not going to play because of COVID. So I'm kind of with you. Let's stop picking college games on the air, because nobody has any idea who's playing, who's not playing, who's healthy, who's not healthy.
They never tell you.
Yeah, we got the Titans.
3 seconds before the game
starts. We got the Titans yesterday, given the points. You had the under, obviously, in the Packer game on Thursday. So 2-3, which puts us, by the way, one game up on second place so far. We are 21-22, 7 games back behind Chuck and Buck. One game up on Furness and, like, way behind, or way up on Puck and Slick for sure, so they're not even a factor right now. Yeah, it's not hard to do, by
they
the
try,
way.
Like, do they try to lose? Because if they try to lose, they're actually very good.
You know, they're only two behind.
Yeah, but that's like 16 behind in real life. That's like Canadian money.
They've had three straight winning weeks. They're don't make me defend close. That
no,
show.
No, they're done. They're done. All right, anyway. I like the Lions this weekend at home against Washington. Washington's quarterback, Kyle Allen's banged up. Is Alex Smith going to start that game?
That's the
word. Washington, they're back home. They did not play well this last weekend. They're given 3 against Washington. They have not won a home game all year, which means they're freaking due. The Lions are due. Matt Stafford was in COVID protocol, could barely practice, didn't look good, I think, with a week of practice, playing back home. They're not going to lose 3 in a row. I like the Lions at home, given 3 against Washington this weekend. Fact or fiction to 49451 right now, depending on your take on that pick.
That's the first call you've made in a couple weeks where I've been like, okay.
Congrats.
Okay.
Was that not a garbage pick?
The Detroit Lions.
Garbage yards.
The Detroit Lions have lost their last 2 games to the Vikings and the Colts.
Yeah.
They have also lost to the Bears and the Packers and the Saints.
Right.
Washington is none of those teams.
Correct.
And Washington is more like the teams they beat, the Jaguars and the Falcons. They actually beat the Cardinals earlier on this
By the
season.
Way, just so you know, I don't need your pity. Okay, you can save your pity.
Would you just like me to tell you it was a crappy pick like I did last week?
If you want to, that's fine. Go ahead. I don't give a damn. Listen, you want to give me your freaking pity, save it for somebody else.
There's plenty of places I can go where people believe in me.
All right, 3:39. Joel Klatt will join us at 4 o'clock. What's his take on the Pac-12? The Dogs. Should Clemson be given a break because Trevor Lawrence didn't play against Notre Dame on Saturday? Joel Klatt joining us courtesy of Cited Debates at 4 o'clock today, talking college football and Softy.
It's Auto Collision Centers.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the 12th man in the NFL. Seattle's original diehard sports station. Sports Radio 950, KJR.
You know, I find the... hi, Softy Dick here, by the way, until 5:15.
Hi,
Patriots,
Softy Dick.
Jets, Softy. I'm Dick Softy at Softy Dick, hanging out until 5:15. The game everybody's been waiting for, Patriots Jets at 5:15 tonight.
41 yards.
Oh, God. We saw that yesterday. A couple of 41 yards. Actually, we had one from Beth. Beth gave us one. On Saturday night, she gave us one. Yeah, I got to go find it, man. It was unbelievable. So we'll find that for you. But I find the Ken Norton Jr. conversation very intriguing because on one hand, we know the Seahawks defense is struggling, correct? On the other hand, we also know that Ken Norton Jr., in his 6 years as defensive coordinator, based on yards per game, his defenses, Dick, were ranked 22nd, 26th, 23rd, 16th, 26th, and now 32nd, scoring 22nd, 20th, 20th, 11th, 22nd, and now 24th in the NFL. Ken Norton Jr., for as great a guy as he is, and we love Ken Norton Jr. as a guy, not so great as a defensive coordinator. Part of me would say, hey, look, if you're going to get rid of him, then just get rid of him, right? This consulting stuff, bringing people in, looking over his shoulder, blah, blah, blah. But in the end, Pete Carroll needs to do what's best for this football team.
Right.
And if he feels like he has a defense and he agrees with you that the names are here already and they should not be this bad, which is kind of what I think. I think when you have a defense with Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Jaron Reed, Puna Ford, Shaquille Griffin, I mean, this is not an elite defense.
Enough talent.
But they shouldn't be this piss poor.
Enough talent.
They shouldn't be. So I get having loyalty to your coaches, and that, for the most part, has served Pete Carroll very, very well in his coaching career. Is it a detriment right now, especially given the special circumstances, Dick, of Dan Quinn being available?
Well, and that loyalty maybe has cost him because, you know, reading Larry Stone's piece today, I think it'll probably be in tomorrow's paper, but it was online this afternoon. He talked about, and I had forgotten this, Pete Carroll picked Gus Bradley over Ken Norton. Then he picked Dan Quinn over Ken Norton. Then he picked Chris Richard over Ken Norton. And then he reportedly went back to Gus in 2017 to see if he wanted to take the job before he hired Ken Norton. So it almost feels like there was an indebtedness to Ken. It's like, man, I've passed you up time and time and time again. Okay, let's give you your shot now. And obviously, like you've mentioned, the numbers just don't stack up. I would worry about removing a guy, particularly a guy that the players love. I mean, Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, the two leaders on your defense, would absolutely go bonkers if they fired Ken Norton. I don't know if that's a good idea in the middle of the season, particularly when you're tied for the best record in the NFC.
Yeah, I just don't know. I'm trying to think off the top of my head how many NFL teams actually replace a guy during the season and then actually go on a run because of that guy. Yeah. I mean, there's
been... Well, most teams are like 2-6 when they do it, not 6-2.
Exactly. And you know what? Well, and there's another element to this, and that is that Pete Carroll's the defensive coach on this team.
Yeah.
It's his baby. How many times have we mentioned it's his baby, it's his baby, it's his baby, over and over and over and over again? So we give Pete Carroll credit for the defense when things are going well, but when the defense is getting, you know, cracked every single week, we're not talking about Pete Carroll, we're talking about Ken Norton. Why is that? I mean, this is PK. As long as he's here, he's going to be the smartest defensive mind in the room every single week. So I don't know how much a change of defensive coordinator means, honestly, because this is Pete Carroll's defense. It is his baby, and he's not going anywhere.
Well,
the guy just signed a brand new contract.
And if you were to get rid of Ken Norton, there's only one guy you even can bring in.
Of course.
And that's Dan Quinn. You can't bring in somebody outside.
Who knows if he'll even do it, by the way.
Exactly.
Right?
And Pete did call that. You know, he admitted it. You know, he swung and missed on the, what was it, 3rd and 16?
That's what he says.
The screen pass. I mean, he fell on the sword there and said, I called that blitz.
Do you believe that?
I don't know.
You believe that? Because what you just said right there is exactly right. He falls on the sword, which is what he should do. Pete Carroll is awesome at that. Pete Carroll, it's always me, me, me. When's the last time you heard Pete Carroll blame anybody for anything besides himself? That's not what he does.
Right.
He doesn't do that.
Well, I thought yesterday in the press conference, I mean, he was basically saying guys were not where they were supposed to be. That's kind of like as close to blaming some of the players as you ever heard, but it's not an individual player.
Guys.
It's always we were not in the place we were supposed to
be. Real quick, before the update, we got some breaking news.
Ooh, is it good news or bad news?
I'd say so. That's good news.
Okay, good, because it's 2020 and I'm tired of bad news.
Kyle Lewis is your Rookie of the Year in the American League. Just came out. Joins Evan White as a Gold Glove Award winner. So two rookies on this Mariner baseball team. Evan White and now Kyle Lewis, who Kyle Lewis played last year, of course, but did not accumulate enough time to be exempt from Rookie of the Year. Two young guys flashing signs of brilliance, one guy on defense, one guy with his entire game. But Kyle Lewis has been named your AL Rookie of the Year. That just came down a few seconds ago.
I am going to give a public shout-out on the air not only to Kyle Lewis, but our good friend Corey Brock.
Oh, yeah, he was on.
Who
it.
Predicted at 50-1. Kyle Lewis would win the Rookie of the Year. Why, oh, why, oh, why didn't I put, you know, a nice cool $100 on that?
Because we're stupid.
Really, really good right now.
Kyle Lewis had an 801 OPS, 11 bombs, and 28 RBIs in 58 games for the M's. I don't know any season over 58 where you would not take those numbers from Kyle Lewis. Ever. We'll get a break. Joel Klatt will join us, courtesy of Cited Debates, and talk some college football. His take on the Dogs, is the Pac-12 out of it? Does Clemson get a break because Trevor Lawrence didn't play on Saturday? And is college football teetering on the edge of maybe having to shut the whole thing down? We'll talk to Joel Klatt, courtesy of Cited Debates, next on 950 KJR.